No Defense with Jeff Beck.
Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Jeff Beck. If you read Kevin MacDonald's A Culture of Critique, then you may remember Table 1, which contrasts the norms of Europeans with those of Jews. Differences ranging from kinship and family systems to moral and intellectual grounding. One might generalize from this chart and say Europeans are more individualistic than Jews. And this is an important generalization, one that needs to be understood. So before proceeding with Mr. MacDonald's research, I'd like to say something briefly about this phenomenon of individualism. It is true that whites are more individualistic than Jews, but I'd also like to suggest the present state of our people, which might be described as hyper-individualistic, is not a natural state. There are many reasons for this dangerous state we've been led to, but I'd like to consider one reason in particular, the vulnerability of an individual before an organized group, particularly an organized group which controls opinion-forming media, this group being the Jews. Quote, "The individual is placed in a minority position and burdened at the same time with total responsibility. Such conditions make an individualist society fertile ground for modern propaganda. The permanent uncertainty, the social mobility, and the absence of sociological protection and of traditional frames of reference, all these provide propaganda with a malleable environment so that the individual can be fed information and conditioned at will." That's from Jacques Ellul's book, Propaganda. So, with that in mind, let's return to MacDonald. The Culture of Critique is a well-known book. But in this broadcast, I'd like to talk about another of MacDonald's books, the second in his trilogy documenting Jewish ethnocentrism, entitled Separation and Its Discontents. The key to understanding his research is to recognize the collective behavior of groups and not specific individuals which comprise them. It's the looking at the entire forest and not the tree. This is often very difficult for our people, not because we lack the innate ability, but rather this thinking skill has been systematically suppressed by propaganda from the media, by government through laws, and by schools through social conditioning. When criticizing the Jews, many counter by citing the accomplishments of such and such a doctor or such and such a scientist, redirecting the issue of group accountability onto specific individuals. Whether the cited accomplishments are legitimate or not, the question is whether the aggregate effect of organized Jewry upon Gentile society is harmful. Anyway, European ethnocentrism, however muted when compared to other groups, was not so long ago a favored characteristic among our kind. If one examines our history from antiquity to, say, World War II, one can discover strong in-group and out-group distinctions. My grandmother told me that her brother dragged a Negro off a Houston streetcar and pushed him into the street for sitting in the wrong section of the car. Society in the 1920s expected white men to defend their interests and keep the blacks under control. And they liked it that way. Though it's important to place the subject of individualism and collectivism and ethnic interests in a much larger context. European society during the medieval period was organized not along the principle of individualism, but was a collective body with numerous layers of hierarchical stratification, a hierarchy with each link in the social stratification owing obligation to those above and assistance to those below. This collective organization of European society was commonly known as the feudal system, and it endured for a millennium, blunting the Muslim invasion and keeping the Jews in a box. Medieval life was very different than our own, but it was a rich life, rich in meaning. And if you traveled Europe and visited the mighty cathedrals and castles, one can grasp their high level of accomplishment. The development of medieval society is connected to the hip with the Catholic Church. But how did this church form? In Separation and Its Discontents, MacDonald gives special attention to the rise of the early church. with particular emphasis on conflicts between Christianity and Judaism. Quote, "The Christian church in late antiquity was in its very essence the embodiment of a powerful anti-Semitic movement that arose because of Gentile concerns with resource and reproductive competition with Jews," end quote. Later, MacDonald explains that National Socialism, too, arose in Germany as a response to Jewish ethnocentrism. More on that later. Today's Christian Zionists might be shocked to learn that the early church fathers were vehement anti-Semites. Eusebius, St. John Chrysostom, St. Cyril, St. Jerome, St. Augustine, and St. Ambrose all expressed outright intolerance of Jews, and often in many different documents, and their concerns extended beyond the theological disputes with Jews. MacDonald writes that Chrysostom, quote, "describes Jews as numerous and wealthy, and he complains about the wealth of the Jewish patriarch." He states that the patriarchs are not priests fulfilling a purely religious function, but rather they are shopkeepers and businessmen, indicating that Chrysostom viewed Judaism more as an economic entity than a religious organization. Jews are often compared to predatory beasts, and they are accused of virtually every evil, including economic crimes such as profiteering. The intensely anti-Jewish St. Jerome also refers to Jews as encircling Christians and seeking to tear them apart. Jerome decries the Jews' love for money. In several passages, he complained that Jews were multiplying like vermin, a comment that clearly suggests a concern with Jewish reproductive success. End quote. Considering these sentiments, it is not surprising that the Western Church promulgated legal and economic sanctions against Jews as a matter of policy. Interestingly enough, these policies favored, quote, "popular sentiment by combating the repeated tendencies of rulers, that is, feudal lords, to favor the Jews for their own ends, especially with regard to Jewish money lending," argues MacDonald. These policies adopted by the Western medieval church often favored outright expulsion of Jews, and these policies led to the development of a prosperous middle class in Western European societies, often at the expense of feudal lords. Much of Eastern Europe had no effective corporate body which opposed the Jews. There, segments of the feudal nobility succumbed to Jewish influence, throttling the development of a middle class. MacDonald specifically mentions the arrenda system in which, quote, "a Jewish agent would lease an estate from a nobleman. In return for a set fee, the leaseholder would have the right to all economic production of the estate and would also retain control of the feudal rights, including onerous forced labor requirements," end quote. So, now we come to the 20th century and the topic of National Socialism. In Chapter 5 of Separation and Its Discontents, the chapter heading is entitled National Socialism as an Anti-Jewish Group Evolutionary Strategy. And this chapter is MacDonald's only extended look at the events of the 20th century. Interestingly, most of the focus is not on Hitler and the Nazis, but on Jewish ethnocentrism preceding the emergence of the National Socialist State. The surprising aspect of Chapter 5 is not the words and actions associated with the ideological founders of National Socialism, but the words and actions of Germany's Jews, which have a surprising characteristic, a quality which can only be described as racialist. Consider this quote from a Zionist journal a few decades before the rise of National Socialism, which MacDonald uses to illustrate Jewish ethnocentrism in Germany. Quote, "Those who demand assimilation of us do not yet know that a man cannot get out of his skin. Or else they know this and then expect of us shameful daily humiliation, which consists in feigning Aryanism, suppressing our instincts, and squeezing into the skin of an Aryan, which this does not fit us at all," end quote. Again, MacDonald makes the case that National Socialism was a group evolutionary strategy which developed because of a perception among Germans that their group's interests were being undermined by Jewish ethnocentrism. And with that in mind, consider that Germany's collapse after World War I precipitated a short-lived Bolshevik revolution in Bavaria, organized by a Jew, Kurt Eisner, in 1918. In neighboring Hungary at the same time, the Jew Bela Kun toppled the government and proclaimed a communist state, and then proceeded to terrorize the populace. And of course, the Jews also played a predominant role in the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, a revolution most communists thought would first happen in Germany. The mass killings, the arrests, and the slaughtering of the Tsar's family in Russia were events that many Germans felt were fated for their land. Nor could perceptive Germans ignore the role Jews played in the Weimar corruption. As historian David Irving notes, quote, "The scale of Germany's Jewish problem is revealed by an unpublished manuscript by Hitler's predecessor as Chancellor, Dr. Heinrich Brüning. Writing in American Exile in 1943, he stated that after inflation, there was only one major German bank not controlled by the Jews, some of them utterly corrupt. In 1931, Brüning brought the banks under government supervision and had to keep the government's findings of dishonesty in the banks secret for fear of provoking anti-Semitic riots." End quote. If you accept McDonald's thesis that National Socialism is an anti-Jewish group evolutionary strategy provoked by Jewish ethnocentrism, then it might be asked, what type of strategy did the National Socialists use to counter the Jews? To answer this question, I'll close this broadcast by reading from the opening paragraphs of Chapter 5 in Separation and Its Discontents. Quote, "The National Socialist government in Germany from 1933 to 45 is a departure from Western tendencies towards universalism and muted individualism in the direction of racial nationalism and cohesive collectivism." McDonald continues, quote, "Most basically, National Socialism aimed at developing a cohesive group. There was an emphasis on the inculcation of selfless behavior and with in-group altruism, combined with out-group hostility." That's something to think about. Thank you for listening.